I chose to write about a choir director who's Lutheran and who's a big city girl but has moved to a small town.
Katie Schuerman talking about her new novel, The Choir Immortal.
I really wanted to address suffering in the present tense, this theology of the cross.
You can find out more about The Choir Immortal at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Choir Immortal by Katie Schuerman.
Nothing good is safe whilst Noah's alive. And I can't make another speech about it. Snow has to pay for what he's done.
One way or another, this war's gonna come to an end. There's only one thing you could do now to add more fire to this rebellion.
We all have one enemy. He corrupts everyone and everything. He turns the best of us against each other.
That's an excerpt from the movie Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. Our reviewer of these films, Pastor Ted Giese, says it's a war movie. It's a war in that dystopic future that is familiar to the readers of the Hunger Games books and the viewers of the movies that have come out so far. It also is a movie that has as a large part of its theme, the end justifies the means. Should that concern Christian viewers? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 24th of November. We're going to be reviewing the movie Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2 with Pastor Ted Giese. Then a little bit later, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller joins us for our regular series responding to evangelical cliches today. You can't put God in a box. Now, you can join us for the next 1 hour with your questions or your comments, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Pastor Ted Giese is a regular guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. He joins us to review the movie Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. Pastor Giese, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
You say that a big part of the plot here revolves around the idea that the end justifies the means. Explain that concept to us, and should it concern Christian viewers?
Yeah, because it is a war movie, there's concrete objectives that they're trying to get to. So they're basically doing whatever they possibly can to meet their objectives. Unfortunately, this can undercut mercy and love and compassion at times, right? So that's something that a Christian viewer might want to be kind of careful of when they're thinking about it. Now, the deal with this movie is that that's kind of not where it ends. Like, the final note of the movie isn't there, but a lot happens in the movie that falls directly under that banner of the end justifying the means. So, for instance, near the beginning of the movie, they're securing one of these 13 districts in this dystopic future. And in order to do that, they put civilians in peril to do it. And the lead character, played by Jennifer Lawrence, Katniss Everdeen, she objects to this. And then one of the men in the love triangle that she's in, played by Liam Hemsworth, Gale Hawthorne, this character, he's in favor of putting them in danger because he thinks that they are collaborators, even though they're civilians. They're collaborators with President Snow, and they're trying to overthrow President Snow's control over the districts from his mansion in the Capitol district. So this is kind of sets some things up, and because it's part two of a two-part thing, this is a lot of the action got backloaded to this film. Mockingjay Part 1 is kind of the setup, and then Mockingjay Part 2 is the conclusion. So our review today might be a little spoilery, so if people haven't seen it yet and are thinking of seeing it, maybe they might want to hang on before you listen to the whole interview.
So since we're dealing with the Part 2, can you give us a kind of a plot summary up to this point? Because we're not just dealing with the second part of this, but we're dealing with one of multiple parts of the Hunger Games movies. How do you explain the whole Hunger Games universe and plot line up to this point as briefly as possible?
Okay, let's try to be concise. Basically, what you have is a post-apocalyptic world where the people left over kind of band together to create their own little civilization. What they came up with was a system of games that are kind of like the Olympics, sort of, televised in all of the districts. And each district sends two young people chosen by lottery to go to these games, except they're more like gladiatorial games. And the people in the games, these young people, have to kill each other in order to have a final victor. And there's generally, there's supposed to be one final victor at the end. And then there are benefits for that district in terms of food and things that they could use. And the victor themselves gets to live in the lap of luxury in the central district. And that's kind of the how your main character of Katniss Everdeen gets involved in the story in the first place. So through the course of these four movies, then she kind of moves along from being a complete nobody to being the head of, well, the poster child, the propaganda face of the resistance against President Snow, who's been the president running the show from the central, or from the central district, the capital district, rather. And that's kind of your story. So it has this thread of an uprising that slowly kind of takes shape and takes form until now you're in full-blown war to topple a dictatorship or a regime change kind of situation.
Is that where the end justifies the means comes back in, that the main character, along with all the other characters, end up in the pursuit of their goal compromising an awful lot of things?
Well, they're forced to compromise things right from the get-go, because when you're sent into these Hunger Games, as they call them, you have to kill, even if it's not your nature to kill. And it's being broadcast on television. So, like, the whole thing is all about compromise, like, the whole way through. So navigating a life in which you're forced to compromise along the way is kind of a general theme throughout the whole thing. And because of the way in which the capital district so strongly puts down the other districts and uses all of their resources, they really come across as kind of a totalitarian fascist sort of dictatorship. And that you know, in terms of just war theory, if you really want to keep thinking about this way outside of where they're probably even talking about in the books, there are no other countries around. There's no other, you know, group of people who can come in and rescue these put-upon individuals. The only people who can rescue them basically is themselves. And this is the situation they're in. They're starving. They're being abused and taken advantage of, and they have to do something about it. But even still, the question of mercy is important for a Christian viewer as they watch the movie.
Okay. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but and hoping that those who don't want it spoiled will listen at a future time. In the end, is the compromise worth it, or in the end, do we see a noble character in the main character of The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2?
I think so. I think that she comes to a place of being a noble character, but she is not a noble character all the way through. There are many opportunities where what she's doing is really selfish, actually. Not that they're terrible things per se, like trying to, you know, protect your family, protect your country, people, or whatever. But she's got her own reasons for doing all these things. She has a personal beef with this President Snow. She wants to personally assassinate him. So, and it's not that she just wants to bring him to justice, quote unquote. She wants to put the arrow in him herself. So that's a little different, I think. In the end, she ends up in a place where love is more important than vengeance. But really, it's in the aftermath of the war, when the war is over, and it's the final note of the movie. And there's a quote at the very end that says, she's talking to a child of hers, and she says, "Did you have a nightmare? I have nightmares too. Someday I'll explain it to you, why they came, why they won't ever go away, but I'll tell you how to survive it. I make a list in my head of all the good things I've seen someone do, every little thing I could remember. It's like a game. I do it over and over. It gets a little tedious after all these years, but there are much worse games to play." And she's referring back to the Hunger Games, because now they've been suspended. There are going to be no more Hunger Games after they have won this war. And really, it mixed in there, like for the Christian viewer, there's little things in there that sound a lot like Romans chapter 13, or rather 1 Corinthians chapter 13 with St. Paul when he's talking about love. And particularly this idea of you know, keeping a list maybe, but the way St. Paul talks about it, he talks about how love is not irritable or resentful, and sometimes that gets translated as it keeps no record of wrongs. So the opposite of keeping a record of wrongs would be keeping a record of rights, of good things that somebody has done. And she talks about how maybe that's tedious, but St. Paul also talks about it in 1 Corinthians 13 as how love is patient and kind. So there seems to be a major shift afterwards for the Katniss Everdeen character, although she does carry the scars of all of the compromises along the way that occurred in order to get to the end.
You say that there's also a question posed in the course of the plot for perhaps the Christian viewer when it comes to, you know, not knowing the outcome of the thing, whether or not she's actually going to exact her revenge if she gets the opportunity, personally, if she gets the opportunity to do so. A parallel with a rather familiar Old Testament story regarding King David and King Saul.
Yeah, with King David and King Saul, you have this, they're both anointed king of Israel at the same time. The way that story unfolds in Scripture is that David won't harm King Saul. King Saul wants David dead. And there's a whole stretch of time in 1 Samuel where David is on the run and has opportunity to kill King Saul, but doesn't. And this is, I think, kind of an interesting parallel in that here's David, and David is a person who starts out as a nobody, just like Katniss Everdeen, and slowly gains ability and stature in the land, amongst friends, amongst the powerful, to the point where there's like this propaganda machine that's kind of running around him. There's even the passage in 1 Samuel. It comes up a number of times, but near the end, you've got the Philistine saying, "Is this not David of whom they sing to one another in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s." So he's got this propaganda machine swirling around him, just like Katniss Everdeen does. But the contrast between these two characters is that David doesn't want Saul to be killed. He doesn't want to kill him. But Katniss does. So then, if you're making that connection as you're watching the movie, you're going to wonder, what is she going to do with President Snow when she finally has opportunity? And because it's Hollywood, that's the nature of these books. That's kind of a question that's in the back of the mind as you're watching it. And it's kind of interesting to see how that moment plays out. It's a little predictable maybe, but it's also probably quite satisfying.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about this whole series of movies as perhaps an intentional, maybe unintentional commentary on how the media is kind of a player, how we become participants through the media, if not only voyeurs in the media, of all these things that are unfolding. For the Hunger Games, it is the public captivated by the games themselves, by the drama surrounding them. Seems to be a bit of a commentary on our media-obsessed culture. What are your thoughts?
It's hard to avoid that when you're watching them. Like, when I originally went to the first of these movies, I didn't, like, it already kind of became a big thing, and I went, and my wife had read the young adult novels. And I thought that was an interesting element of these movies. And it is interesting. And the way that we live our lives now, I think it's not bad for Christian viewers of this movie and also Christian consumers of media in their daily life to consider what might actually be propaganda. Because the way that the Hunger Games movies presents the notion or idea or the activity of propaganda, they don't really come out strongly against or for it. I mean, it's certainly a useful tool, but there is no real moral hand-wringing over propaganda, which I think is unusual, because generally speaking, I think most people are wary of the idea of propaganda, because propaganda is trying to sway your opinion on something. And I think for a Lutheran viewer of a movie like this, or all of these movies, for instance, and then also in media consumption in general, just kind of have your dukes up. Like, be aware that there are people who are actually trying to sway your opinion about something. And they may not have your best intentions at heart. And that's something to kind of keep in mind. I think that because this kind of shows the behind-the-scenes element of that along the way, I think that it's probably good for viewers, particularly young viewers, to take some time and think about that as they're watching these movies.
Finally, then, these novels aimed at young adults of the dystopic future, Hunger Games has kind of become the first of a franchise like this that really made it big. Many attempts to do the same thing in both novels and films that have kind of not hit the same bar. As a whole, do you think they work, the films work in bringing the novels to film and achieving whatever it was that they were trying to do with the novels? Do they work as a series of films, and do they work as something that you say, well, the Hunger Games series of movies, those are good movies?
I haven't read these books myself. So what I'll say, though, is that you're right. This is like the gold standard of these kinds of movies right now. Like, the Divergent series is good, but it's not like this. The Maze Runner series is not as good as Divergent, but it's like this. So there are a bunch of them out there, and we've talked about a number of them along the way. I think in a way, the thing I liked about this was that because of the success of these movies, their budget got bigger. I don't think that this last book needed to be two movies. But what did kind of happen along the way is that for this particular series, I thought they got better as they went. Which is not always the case for sequels. Lots of times sequels kind of like peter out or lose track of where they wanted to be. So overall, I was more satisfied with these movies than I thought I was going to be. But I then probably had fairly low expectations for them in general.
Given that this is, as you say, a war movie, any pastoral cautions for viewers?
It's kind of an interesting thing. There are some really intense moments in it. There's one little section of the movie that's a lot like Aliens by James Cameron. So there's a couple really intense moments. It's very clean when it comes to profanities. There's very little poor language in it or crass language, but it does have these kind of very intense moments. So, I mean, I think for the intended audience of like a teen audience, I mean, this works pretty good overall. Small children, I don't think it's obviously not going to be appropriate for them. And it's not like a war movie in the harsh kind of, you know, Full Metal Jacket kind of style of way of doing it. But, I mean, that is the main theme of this film.
Folks, I highly recommend that you both read and share Pastor Ted Giese's review of The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2 at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies: A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to take it up with, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller is going to join us for our weekly series with him, responding to evangelical cliches. You've heard it before, that you can't put God in a box. Now, that sounds like something you couldn't do with God. What's wrong with that evangelical cliche? We'll find out right after this.
I have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Standing firm in a hostile world is the theme of the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th. This confessional Lutheran conference features Issues Etc. guest Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. If you're in Texas or would like some warmer weather in February, check out the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th at faithlutheransa.org. faithlutheransa.org.